Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
6 months later, and the genocide continues. Massacres everywhere, in Gaza City, in Khan Yunis, and still in Rafah, even though they say that they are getting ready to invade it. The Israeli armed forces have withdrawn their ground brigades from the Gaza Strip. The German media are reporting this evening that an end to the war is being negotiated in Cairo right now. Well, we'll see about that. Increasing signs that the Western governments, under pressure from their own electorates and the fear of their own courts and their own judgments, are pressing them to press their attack dog Netanyahu to call off the slaughter. And it's open season on me, on my television shows, and on the Workers' Party of Britain. Much more coming up in the next 2 hours. Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night because it's the mother of all talk shows.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
Let me start with the least important things first, namely the Daily Telegraph. That's the newspaper that I cost £2.3 million when they defamed me in 2005, 2003, actually. The case came to a conclusion in 2005 with the Telegraph £2.3 million down. So they'd be well advised to be extra careful when writing about me. But who knew that the Sunday Telegraph, the Sunday Torygraph, a fading, failing newspaper that almost had to be bailed out by the United Arab Emirates before the colonels who read it decided that Johnny Foreigner could not possibly be allowed to own their newspaper? Who knew that the Sunday Telegraph would be so interested in the social media scribblings of some people unknown to me, others known to me and of whom I'm proud, but people unknown to me who are described as Workers' Party activists have had their social media scribblings mined by, I doubt if it was the Sunday Telegraph, if you want my honest opinion. I somehow think that they had assistance from somewhere. After all, it's a very labour-intensive job to find from amongst the thousands of new members and activists of the Workers' Party of Britain obscure comments made, which actually, when you decipher them, were no more or less than what is common parlance in the feverish, febrile atmosphere that currently exists and is bound to exist, you know, when there's a genocide going on, when there's an actual genocide going on. I'll summarize them this way because I wasn't able to read the whole article because that would have required me to give the Telegraph money. And, you know, it's the other way around normally. They give me money. I didn't want to pay their paywall fee, so I've only seen excerpts. But if I summarize it, they attack us for claiming that Israel has purchased a large swathe of the British political scene. Well, who can doubt that? The supporters of Israel have purchased a massive stake in the British political infrastructure, superstructure. the conservative friends of Israel, the Labour friends of Israel, the Liberal Democrat friends of Israel, all these friends of Israel, for reasons that no one can really fathom. I told you on Wednesday about the two MPs for Runcorn. Have you seen Runcorn? Both of the MPs for Runcorn are members of the Labour Friends of Israel. Why? What first attracted the members of Parliament for Runcorn in Cheshire to a tiny little state on the edge of the Mediterranean, thousands of miles away? Certainly not the interests of the people of Runcorn, who've prospered little from the tenure of their two Labour MPs over recent years. Maybe that's a place we should be looking more closely at. So that's the first charge that activists of the Workers' Party have said, that Israel owns a considerable part of the British political system. I'm sorry, Your Honour, my Lord. I'm sorry, but that one has veritas as its ultimate defence. And the other was that some of our activists had compared the actions of Israel over the last 6 months exactly today with the Nazis. Well, again, my Lord, Your Honour, when you are a country on trial for genocide in front of the world's highest court and have been found plausibly to be guilty of same charge and sent for trial on same charge, is anybody surprised that people might begin to compare them to another genocide, the genocide of Hitler fascism, the Beast of Berlin, the people who slaughtered the Warsaw Ghetto, the people who drowned in blood millions of people in Treblinka, in Auschwitz, in all of these other death camps liberated by the Soviet Red Army and their disastrous, ghastly secrets exposed to the world by those who did the most to defeat that Hitler fascism, Mussolini fascism, Tojo fascism. Is anyone surprised that when you massacre tens of thousands of women and children in cold blood, women and children who've got nowhere to run, nowhere to hide, no shelter, no exit, not even the sea to run into, is anyone surprised that people might begin to compare such methods with the methods of fascism in the Holocaust with a capital H? Well, if you really don't know that Israel has purchased a large number of British politicians, not to mention American politicians, they seem to have purchased all of those, all of them, millions and millions of dollars used to purchase that. If you really don't know that, and if you are really surprised that a country on trial for genocide might be compared to another country which indisputably committed genocide, namely the fascist regimes of the 1930s and 40s, you're not really a newspaper. But then the Telegraph isn't really a newspaper. As the briefest scan of its last 6 months' coverage makes clear, it is a propaganda sheet. I said sheet. It is a propaganda sheet designed for and used for the purpose of fooling the British people into believing that supporting this genocide could conceivably be morally justified or could conceivably be held to be in the British national interest. And of course, neither of those things could possibly hold up to question. The second thing that's happened, you remember I told you about my new show, an irregular show that I do myself, that I make myself from my own pocket, for which I get paid not a cent from anybody. Have it out with Galloway.com. Do you remember? I showed you a little, there it is. I showed you a little vignette from it. Today, the head of the Foreign Affairs Committee in the British Parliament, no less, gave me, and presumably it was intended for other eyes, a stentorian warning that I must not be allowed to present that show. Well, thank you, Alice Kearney, whoever you are. Never set eyes on you in my life. Never heard you speak. Never seen your name ever in print before. She warned me, and presumably, as I say, intended for other eyes, that I must not be allowed to make this show. Well, let me tell you, Alice or Alicia, whatever your name is, let me tell you something. First of all, you've just gained rather a large number of new viewers for my show, Have It Out with Galloway, when I next make it, when it next goes out. Thank you for that. But you, nor anybody else, in Parliament or out of Parliament, will ever be able to stop me speaking my truth anywhere I decide to speak it. Now, as it happens, this is nobody's show but mine. M-I-N-E, mine. Nobody else's show but mine. But let me tell you, Iran is not my enemy. Russia is not my enemy. China is not my enemy. You are my enemy. You and your shadow, capital S, and the rotten system that both of you represent are my enemy. So don't dream of imagining that I'm afraid of you or anybody else. I am afraid only of God and occasionally of my good wife. Let me turn to more important things. According to the German media, the talks going on, indirect, no doubt, or at least on the face of it, indirect, between Qatar, the Egyptian government, and the CIA, are close to agreement on ending the war in Gaza. A six-month war that has murdered and maimed well over 120,000 people, has left almost 2 million Palestinians homeless. And by homeless, I mean not just lacking a home. I mean their homes are now in rubble. Their homes are completely destroyed. A 6 months which has unleashed devastating epidemics of disease. A 6 months which has left well over 70% of all Palestinian children, and most of the people in Gaza are children, suffering from malnutrition, except where they are suffering and dying from actual starvation. Not malnutrition, but starvation, which has displaced almost 2 million people, which has left the entire Gaza Strip looking even worse than the Warsaw ghetto crushed by fascism in the 1940s. If the war does end this evening, does anybody think we're going to move on? Does anybody think that it can be back to business as usual between our countries, our companies, our politicians, and the state responsible for all of that? Does anybody imagine that there will ever be glad, confident morning again, either for Israel or for its many friends in the political class in Western countries? Does anybody imagine that we're going to forget these things? You see, unlike the Holocaust of the 1930s and 40s, we've got the receipts, all of us, on our telephones, on our computers, in our minds. We've seen these children in rags, their flesh in ribbons, hanging on hooks, dead. We've seen them with their heads blown off. We've seen them with their guts spilling out. We've seen the children mourning their mothers, begging them to come out from the ground and hug them one last time. We've seen the fathers scrambling in the rubble, trying to rescue their wives and their children. We saw it, and we've still got the videos. So don't imagine that if this all ends this evening, this week, for Eid, or whatever other fees they have in mind, that we're going back to business as usual with you, that we're going to forgive you, Joe Biden, that we're going to forgive you, Rishi Sunak, Keir Starmer, David Lammy, Anthony Blinken, little soldier Schultz, little Napoleon Macron. Don't dream of imagining that we are going to forget everything that you did, everything that you facilitated, everything that you made possible during this long dystopian 6-month nightmare in which blood flowed freely because of you. We intend to hold you to account. We intend to vote you out, or we will die trying. We will never forgive you. We'll never forgive Israel. We'll never forgive Netanyahu. We'll never forgive Netanyahu's friends and enablers. This was the moral question of the century. Palestine is the moral center of the world. And where you stood on it will determine how tens of millions of people view you for the rest of your miserable lives before you face the judgment day, as we all will. No one can predict your fate, but we can all hope that you all burn in the hottest fires of hell for the misery, murder, mayhem that you have created for a people who were overwhelmingly women and children. You say that you've won the war, Netanyahu, as you withdraw your soldiers from Gaza. But you know, and we know, that you lost the war. You lost the physical, kinetic war on the ground. You've lost hundreds of soldiers and thousands of wounded soldiers and thousands more mentally damaged because of what you sent them in to do. But above all, you've lost it economically. You've lost culturally. You have lost your soft power advantage forever around the world. Let me turn now, in the next couple of minutes, which is all I have left, to the miserable, featureless desert that we have in Western politics. It's now certain that Zion Don Trump will face off with genocide Joe Biden for the presidency of the United States. It's now clear that little Rishi Sunak, the shoeshine boy for the British Empire, will face up to a block of wood called Keir Starmer. It's obvious that Le Pen is the next president of France, which is why her tooth and claw is currently under operation for removal, just like her fellow right-wing nationalist Meloni in Italy. The price of being allowed to win is that you abandon every radical position that you ever held. Little soldier Schultz and Anna Baerbock, the bonkers foreign minister of Germany, bereft of public support in a way never before seen in German politics. are facing up to the anonymity of Christian democracy. What's my point? My point is that there is now a vacuum in Western politics which needs to be filled. We in the Workers' Party of Britain are seeking to fill it. We're not woke. We're not liberal. We stand up for our own country. We stand up for the interests of our own people. But we will not follow blindly any foreign leader. We will not make an enemy automatically of anyone. Neither will we unconditionally accept your friendship, whoever you are, whatever our history together. We are economically radical. We want to change everything about how people work and are paid for work in our country. We are socially mixed. Some of us are conservative. Some of us are as camp as Christmas. We care not about anybody's personal life, with whom they sleep, as long as they don't frighten the horses or do it in front of the children. Still less do we care what colour you are. Still less do we care how you pray, where you came from, when you came. We care nothing about any of that. If you're in our country legally, then you are a sister and brother to us. And all we ask is that you open your mind to the possibility that the uni party, the two cheeks of the same arse that have led us into disaster after disaster, just open your mind to the possibility that you'd be better off with a perfect, big change. The change to the Workers' Party of Britain. Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a busy, busy night. You can call us. You can vote on our poll. 40,000 of you have already done so, and I'm only now finishing speaking. It's the mother of all talk shows.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
One of my all-time favorite American correspondents. Worked with him for a long time now. We're growing old gracefully, disgracefully together. It's the one and only Garland Nixon radio talk show host and political analyst exemplar. Garland, welcome back to the show. Looking fab as always. I was talking earlier about the fact that people are unlikely to forgive and forget the American and British and other Western politicians who made all of the last 6 months possible. Am I being optimistic? Do you see a possibility if the war ends tonight or tomorrow or this week that Joe Biden can recover, that the stooges in the Congress, the Senate that have made all this possible, that people will turn a page and go back to supporting them?
No. I don't even think that the protesters will stop protesting. I think people now understand that what's needed in Occupy Palestine is justice. And though this is a grave injustice, and though this is a horrific act that's happening, that when it stops, that will not automatically mean justice. I think the Biden administration, I think the Democratic Party would like to believe that when the kinetic war stops, that people will accept that they've done the right thing and they're moving on. I think they're even going to try to, you know, pretend as though they're the good guys now because they stopped a horrible genocide. But in talking to people and listening to, you know, the callers on my various radio talk show hosts, shows, what I hear is a fury. In fact, as I've said before, I've had callers literally call into my show in Washington, D.C., lifelong Democrats, and say to me these exact words: I apologize. I was wrong. You were right about the Democrats. So I think the Democratic Party is in has been exposed. Simple as that. They've been exposed for the beast that they are.
Now, coming up this week is a motion in New York before the United Nations to immediately admit the state of Palestine to full membership of the United Nations. No sane person could oppose that, but doesn't strike me that will achieve anything practically all that much. What's your view?
I certainly agree with you. And since no sane person could oppose it, that certainly means that the U.S. delegation will oppose it. Because certainly, if we've learned anything over the last 6 months, that there's not a sane soul in the empire of imbeciles. But you are right. Again, what we need is a recognition of what Israel is. People understand that these Palestinians are, you know, they are the people that were in this land and that they have a right to justice. What people have to understand is that Israel is not a rational country, that it has become, you know, a brutal, vicious country. Even internally, it is in chaos. The people in Israel, though they are in favor of this massacre, even they recognize that their leadership is out of control. So until we start to look at the fiends that run Israel and how this happened, we cannot resolve this issue, because they will not act rationally. Even if the UN and the United States says you've got to do things a different way, they don't have another option.
Effort is being made to lay the blame at the door of Netanyahu, isn't it? That if not for this aberrant monster, we would not be in this situation. But you and I both know that's completely false. That this situation has been extant for three quarters of a century, that this is just the latest, the most violent, surely, the most blood-soaked, definitely, but it's just the latest in a 76 years of massacre.
Yes, well, the American people, you know, if you go to the protests, which I go to, you know, a number of the various protests, the media hides how many there are, but there are any number of websites that show that daily, particularly on the weekends, there are blockages of bridges and occupying the New York Times or wherever. If you go to those protests, you rarely ever see a picture of Benjamin Netanyahu. I think the American people recognize that Joe Biden is, and I'm going to use this word loosely, at the helm. I don't think we really believe that he's at the helm, but certainly he is, you know, he represents being at the helm. And I think most people in America understand that Joe Biden does, in fact, support the brutality that's going on in occupied Palestine. So I think that the American people, at least, I can't speak outside of it, blames Joe Biden. They see Joe Biden and his team as the culprits here. So their attempt to shift the blame over to Benjamin Netanyahu and then get out of the way and pretend as though they're the good guys because they stopped this hideous man from doing his evil things, that's not going to go far with the American people.
I've been following this thing on social media, APAC Tracker, which very helpfully gives you a little vignette of these stooges in your parliament, Congress, Senate, and how much money they've had from Israel-supporting organizations and individuals. Joe Biden, by the way, is the world record holder. He's received more than $5 million for, and not talking about his presidential funds, him, for his own races, received $5 million from Israel. These people have purchased the American political class, haven't they?
Well, absolutely. You know, their funds have, like an octopus, you know, gotten into all parts of the American political system, and now they control it. I think that the issue of finances are, in a broad way, are going to be one of the most significant discussions in the electoral season going into 2024. Everything from the money going to the politicians to control them. Additionally, AIPAC has pledged $100 million to take out a certain number of members of Congress who are opposing, at least to some extent, their actions in Israel. And this is also important. The United States is spending $400 million to build a base on the island of Yap, an island so small that it's not even on the map. $500 million for a base in the Philippines. They're building bases in Finland. They're building bases in Sweden. Now they've announced they're building a base in Argentina. And in fact, Lockheed Martin has now, people can look this up, they've now gotten a contract to look into building a train tracks on the moon. I have a bridge maybe 12 minutes from my house right now, by probably less than that if I take my boat and run around there, 12 minutes from my house to the Key Bridge. And that they're telling us it's going to take 10 years to get this bridge up. And from the looks of things, they will have finished their train tracks on the moon before we get our bridge built back here in the United States. Americans are realizing that when it comes to finances, our ruling class, it's not even money laundering anymore. It's debt laundering. And what people recognize is this. The definition of a debt is what? It's a claim on future earnings. They are spending our money for the next 50 years on war, on mayhem, on everything except us.
Now, as I said in my monologue, it now looks certain that it's Biden versus Trump. The efforts to criminalize, jail, put off the ballot of Donald Trump have failed. It's too late now. The die is cast. I'm going to ask you what every non-American asks all the time. With 333 million people, with all of your achievements as a people, all that expertise and brilliance and industry and success in the United States, how do you end up with a final bill at which the top of that bill is Trump versus Biden? It's almost impossible to believe these are the best two people that you could produce.
Yeah, well, I think what we're looking at is the tension between the American ruling class and the working class, and of course, the concept of democracy. Because in the concept of democracy, the masses would choose the candidates. And what we're seeing is that the candidates are chosen before the people get an opportunity to vote in the final vote in November. So it shouldn't be surprising that a country where the state represents the ruling class, not only represents them in opposition to the working class. You know, a government generally tells the poor, we're going to protect you from the rich, tells the rich, we're going to protect you from the poor. But we now in America understand that the government works in opposition to the working class. And we're through this all, Americans aren't even sure 100% if those two will be the candidates, because Joe Biden, let's face it, that guy's got one foot in the grave and the other on a banana peel. There is no, you know, guarantee that he's going to live till November, much less win it. And Donald Trump, of course, they're charging him with everything but mopery on the high seas. There's no guarantee that they won't, you know, do the unthinkable to stop him. So Americans are, even yet that you say it's going to be Joe Biden and Donald Trump, I think a lot of Americans are wondering what machinations the ruling class are going to use ultimately to possibly see Nikki Haley versus Gavin Newsom or something crazy like that. Most Americans are not as sure as the people outside of America that these will be the final two candidates.
Lastly, Garland, and I'm always grateful for your time and wisdom. It looks like the Ukraine war is moving rather more swiftly to an end also. The proposition is being made to Zelensky. Blinken said it this very day, that Ukraine's going to have to make some territorial compromises. The idea of a beach party on Crimea feels like a very long time ago. They are getting everyone ready, aren't they, in the hope that Russia will stop advancing stop fighting, stop conquering more Ukrainian territory in exchange for some kind of deal, some kind of territorial compromise. Are the American people being told about this? Or is this being done like the ditching of the Afghan government not that long ago, something that will happen in the night?
Well, a couple of things. Number one, the American people, if you look in the American media, they're getting the same old rhetoric about, you know, Russia's losing 50 planes a day and Ukraine is still, you know, scrappy and they're holding on. Here and there, you will find the occasional more realistic article about this thing. The problem is that in order to come to some kind of a diplomatic end to this conflict, it will require two sides that are reasonable, two sides that are honest, right? I think the Russians understand that they can't trust the neocons. I think the world understands, looking at Gaza, you can't trust these people. They had a Minsk agreement. They've had the Istanbul agreement, both of which were violated by the neocons. I don't think Russia will believe anything that the neocons say in a deal. The only deal that Russia would accept would be what we call a money in hand deal. I will give you this or do this right now, first, in return for that. So I think the neocons would love to get a deal on their terms. I don't think they'll be able to act rationally and bend enough to give a deal to Russia. So I think, and I think Russia understands this, and I think Russia realizes that ultimately they're going to have to impose their will on NATO, and I think they're prepared to do this, and I think they will. I do think that NATO is doing a lot of, Macron and crew, they're doing a lot of bluffing. I think that's all about trying to get themselves some firm ground for negotiation. But I think the reality, 1,500, 2,000 Frenchmen in Ukraine is not going to stop 500,000 Russian soldiers, and they understand that.
I said finally, but I can't resist because it just came back to me. Janet Yellen, who does a mean line in kowtowing. She doesn't seem to know that in China you don't kowtow. That happens in Japan. But hey, they all look alike, don't they? She was kowtowing in Beijing, asking the Middle Kingdom to stop producing so much because the West couldn't keep up. Is that getting coverage in America? Is that not deeply humiliating for the Biden administration?
No, in fact, you have to dig for that. You know, you can find that she went to, in our media, you can find that Janet Yellen went to China, and you'll see something like, you know, she stood up to the Chinese or the Chinese Communist Party or something like that. But the fact of the matter is, what Janet Yellen did was she went to China and said, your system works better than ours. Can you be a little bit more like us so we'll have a chance? She went there and admitted to the world that Western neoliberal capitalism cannot compete with the Chinese system. And I think the Chinese said, thanks, have a nice day, see you later. And by the way, we're not buying your your bonds anymore.
Hallelujah. Some fools say there's no God, Garland. Thanks very much for joining us on the Mother of All Talk Shows. Very much obliged to you. Did Israel deliberately target the Gaza aid workers? This is shaping up to be potentially a record poll. Over 42,000 people have voted now. Either yes or no. You can vote right up until the end of the show. Carlito Chakra says, Garland Nixon talks pure sense, massive respect and admiration for this man. And Fightback says, Garland is a flower in a field of thorns. Kinky says, George, is Garland back on Twitter? I don't think so. I don't think so either. Ping One, the evil of two lessers. Garland Nixon, genius. A Carlito Chakra again, mushroom clouds don't have a silver lining. Carlito, I wish I'd said that. I will. I will. I'll be right back.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
Fiorella Isabel, long time since she's been on. Great guest she was then. Independent journalist, political analyst, and host of Fiorella Isabel and the Convo Couch. What a wonderful name. You have and your show has. Fiorella, welcome back belatedly to the Mother of All Talk Shows. First of all, tell us now where you are, because the last time I saw your report, I think you were in Russia. Are you still there?
Yes, I'm in Moscow right now. I actually just got back from the West Bank, and a lot has been happening in the last few months.
What's the attitude in Moscow to what's happening in Palestine? Is it a significant issue in media, or are they so fully absorbed in the war that NATO has launched on their own borders that Palestine doesn't get much of a look in?
No, not at all. The Palestinian issue has been covered broadly by all of Russian media. And a lot of journalists who have moved here from the West have been intensively covering it because, of, as you may know, obviously the issue of people who have been entirely destroyed by a totalitarian form of a fundamentalist ideology is similar. What we're looking at the Azov battalion, when we're looking at these neo-Nazi regimes that have killed the people in Donbass for now 9 years, you see the same type of sentiments, the same type of attitude in the Zionist regime in Israel. You see that same exact type of attitude. So a lot of people have empathized. As you know, though, Russia has had this, has played the neutral element in the entire region. They have tried to have a relationship with Israel. There are many Russians that are living in Israel. But they also have the Muslim community. They have the Chechen community. And so Russia is a multi-ethnic federation that has tried to wage peace. But now what we've seen happening here after the Crocus City massacre and terrorist attack, we have seen people start to question why, in fact, the people that carried out this attack were specifically seemingly targeted by Ukraine and the United States military industrial surveillance apparatus. And so you see these connections. And I think you may agree that nothing has been happening in a vacuum. Everything we have seen happening in the last few months has happened in tandem. And what we see is that all roads lead to Rome. All roads lead to the United States and the CIA backing these regimes, whether it's Israel in the Middle East, whether it's neo-Nazis in Ukraine, or whether it is, you have the entire history, right, of Al-Qaeda. And we see that the Russian military is currently fighting with Syria, fighting these forces of Al-Qaeda in the region. And they have been together in this battle. So why would, of course, we bring up the issue of ISIS-K? The issue of ISIS-K is brought up in a way to once again point the finger at the Muslim community, at Palestinians, at Hamas, at the greater extension. And I think that none of this is coincidental in what has happened.
I'll come back to several of those points, but just for the, I'm sure, interest of the audience, it is noticeable the number of young and talented Western journalists, particularly American journalists, who are now working in Russia. Must be quite an interesting colony. If ever I'm able to go back to Moscow, I look forward to hanging out with you in the National or one of the one of my favorite hotels. Are you much together? Do you form, as it were, a cultural, political, journalistic colony there, working in Russia, where once upon a time we were told, there's no free media in Russia. The free media is here in the West. And that's now completely reversed, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, you know, what Paris was in the 1920s for the great artists and the great, you know, inspirational people of the world, Moscow is that today. I mean, this is it. This is the area where you come and you really see what you are told. That what you were told your whole life, basically, that what all Americans and all Westerners have been told is a complete and total lie. You have the best transportation system in Europe that I've seen. And I've been to Europe. I've used the tube. I've been all over Europe. It doesn't compare. Moscow train systems are far superior. They're far cleaner. The city of Moscow itself is a complete and total metropolis. It is a cosmopolitan city. The American version of that, the United States tries to paint, is that Moscow in Russia is a gas station with nuclear weapons, that it is simply the image of Russia after the fall of the Soviet Union, where it was in a dire state. But what has happened since has completely changed, and people need to know this. And it's not just Moscow. You can go to St. Petersburg. You can go to Novosibirsk, which is near Siberia. You can go to the Far East in Vladivostok. You can see the development. And there's so much industry here, which kind of shows you that this may be why the United States is interested in Russia so much. And NATO has been pushed as this contingent to completely destroy the Russian Federation and to balkanize it, as of course they intended to do with the Soviet Union, because there's so much undeveloped, untapped potential for industry here. They have so many natural resources. And even what you see in the Donbass, the land there is extremely fertile. And I've been there several times as well. And what I've seen is the resilience of Russians in rebuilding, for example, Mariupol. Now they're rebuilding Sevastopol. These are areas in the Donbass region. And the knowledge of Russia for Americans is just limited to the Cold War. It's limited to villains on propaganda films that we see, and even on video games. But it doesn't show the beautiful culture that they have, museums after museums, restaurants, shops, a lot of these things. And alone, that is not significant only, but it is just the community of people. They're more of a collectivist culture. You see people coming together after the Crocus Massacre, which is why you can't 9/11 Russia in this way. You can't divide them. And you also see the poignant history of the Russian people, where they've had to fight Nazis during the Great Patriotic War and lost millions of people to, of course, then the Maidan Revolution, the Maidan coup that really killed tens of thousands. And now you're seeing this in war in Ukraine, which, of course, we know that the United States, France, and NATO are belligerent in starting a global war by sending actual troops, even though we know that there are already mercenaries there. And it seems like things have gotten so terrible that people are coming and seeing this for themselves and being blown away. Everybody's blown away by the metro. Everybody's blown away by what they see, and just how beautiful of a country it really is. And I really hope more people can come to Russia and see for themselves, because I was told not to come to Russia. I was told to not go to many places, but I think the best thing you can do as a journalist is go to the places you're talking about.
I really hope you get to a free Odessa and you'll see a hitherto unrevealed jewel in the Russian crown. In former times, I was a frequent visitor there. Let's go back to the Middle East, if we may. Fiorella, I'm so old, I remember when the Soviet-Syrian Friendship Treaty was signed. It's well over 50 years ago now. The Soviet Union, successor state Russia, and Syria are allies for more than half a century. The Israeli forces are almost daily, certainly weekly, attacking Syria and attacking other countries in Syria. There must come a point, however full Russia's hands are elsewhere, there must come a point at which Russia feels the need to defend Syria more comprehensively. And I know some Russian troop movements, weapons movements, and observation posts towards the occupied Golan Heights recently. I'm wondering if you sense any hardening of Russia's position towards these Israeli attacks on their longtime ally, Syria.
Well, absolutely. I mean, not only are Russians and Syrians fighting the Al-Qaeda forces together, And these forces that have been, of course, weaponized by both Israel and the United States, as you recall, not recently, Syria was attacked both by these forces and Israel as well. So it, precisely this bombing of the Iranian embassy in Damascus signaled, I believe, a turning point for Russia, because Russia operates according to diplomatic international law. As we all have seen, they have been very restrained in their reactions towards what the United States and NATO have done, but restrictive in that sense. But nevertheless, they have been planning their moves very carefully, only focusing on the special military operation as a form of targeting Ukraine's military and, of course, the military of NATO that is sent there. They haven't really focused ever on gaining some sort of revenge or attacking civilian populations, contrary to what the media says. But in terms of the Israeli and Israel question, that is, as I said in the beginning, it is a very difficult position for Russia, because they have tried to play the neutral party in the entire relationship. And now when you see that Israel, of course, obviously has been committing a genocide in Gaza, they have been attacking Syria and Lebanon constantly. They have been very honest and open about their desire to expand in the region, that it's not going to stop with Gaza, because we know this isn't about Gaza. So they see this, and then they see something that I think Russia, specifically the Kremlin, takes very seriously. The attack on a diplomatic a symbol, on an embassy, that's unprecedented. That is something that they are not going to forgive Israel for. This is something that violates not only international law, but it violates the Vienna law. It violates so much of what they stand for. Russia and China have always been talking about the two-state solution, the 1968 borders, that sort of thing. What the UN pretty much does is what they follow. But now it seems, I think it was clear to all of us for a long time that Israel doesn't care about any international law, that Israel doesn't care what everybody else thinks, because they are never punished. They act with impunity, and there is no punishment to them. So I think this will mark a turning point, because this is now targeting potentially them. And again, in the background of the Crocus City Hall terrorist attack, you can't not question that perhaps all of these terror attacks are in some way connected. And, you know, I don't represent the Russian Federation in any way, but what I do think as an analyzing this is that in respecting diplomacy and respecting international law, there must be a change. And I've said this for a long time. Russia is going to have to make a decision in terms of where they stand. And we know that the United States is Israel's biggest ally. So we can pretty much predict with a certain amount of confidence that Russia is going to go in the direction of standing with the Syrian people.
Finally, you mentioned that the attack on the Crocus Theater. What's the current state of the investigation there? I see some people are still being arrested and brought to court, people who've been involved in the finance, in the weaponizing, and so on. This is a crime so heinous, so grave, that it will mark the Russian people forever. It will never be forgotten. How is the investigation going? And is it widely covered in the media?
Well, yeah, the investigation is ongoing. I mean, they have been arresting everybody that is connected to these attacks. Now, Russia didn't show their cards immediately. This is how they act. The intelligence here basically allowed these people to try and get away and cross over to the Ukraine border in order to spy on them, really hear what they were saying, and then, of course, started arresting the main perpetrators in this case. And something I want to point out of all of this is, you know, the specific group of people were majorly from Tajikistan. They were Tajiks. And this was a selected, a carefully selected group of people, knowing that they mostly represent the blue collar working class in Russia, they're immigrants. And there seems to me like an attempt to create a sort of a fight within the Russian people, within the Russian Federation, to turn them against each other, because they haven't been able, let's be honest, to beat them on the battlefield. They haven't been able to go after Russia at all. Russia has not only just captured Avdiivka, they have been expanding and liberating all these territories simultaneously. Vladimir Putin came off of a great interview with Tucker Carlson, where the world was able to see, because of Tucker's wide platform, all of the things that they thought of Putin come to question. And then on top of that, Putin came out of a 87% election where he was popular, and especially in the new territories in the Donbass. And then you have, of course, the issue of sanctions and BRICS and all of that going for Russia, where they have really said, we don't need the West anymore. We're looking to the East. And that's where they're going. And so obviously there had to be something to try to discombobulate and destabilize Russia. And that, I believe, was the attempt of these people, the puppet masters behind these attacks, who obviously, if Ukraine is there, we know Ukraine doesn't walk without the United States. And so the way Russia has been covering this is not only, of course, going after the specifically designated people who have been tasked to carry this out for money, who are really the pawns of all of this, but also going after the United States, going after Ukraine. They have, from the beginning, they knew that the U.S. media and the State Department saying ISIS-K did it, ISIS-K did it, was a red flag. Maria Zakharova called it out. She said the reaction was very interesting, and it just didn't make any sense. And so what you see in Russian media is not only covering precisely who's behind these attacks, but also who is behind the people that were hired to commit these attacks. And as you said, the Russian people will remember this for a long time, but it will not, as from what I've seen, the thousands of people coming in basically at this point and showing their support either by blood donations or bringing flowers to the site of Crocus City, of City Hall. You see that camaraderie, that resilience of the Russian people. And you see that this isn't going to break them. This isn't going to divide them. They have restricted themselves from falling for this sort of thing that the United States has done to many countries. But again, Russia isn't any other country. And the United States, I think, miscalculated. And if you don't want to say the United States, you want to say whoever is behind all of this, the apparatus of it all. They miscalculated, because Russians have gone through so much, as I said, and this is not going to stop them from coming together. If anything, it actually increased the unity in the people here as a Russian people, because what people need to understand about Russians is that they see themselves as Russians first and foremost. There's many ethnicities here, many different beliefs, many different religions, unlike what you're told, and you're allowed to disagree with people. But overall, they are Russians. They are not there to be divided. And I think that is what we've seen the most out of all of this. And it will not be forgotten.
Fiorella, Isabel, neither will this interview be forgotten by our audience. Thank you very much indeed. Wonderful to see you in such fine voice. And let's meet again soon. Let me take a quick break.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
Last call, I guess, is Duke in Cornwall. I don't know if it's the Duke of Cornwall or just Duke in Cornwall, but he's got a very important thing to talk about. Tomorrow's United States eclipse of the sun. Wow. Duke, go ahead.
Salam alaikum, George. God bless you for the work that you do.
Salaam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you.
Telephoning just to let your viewers and listeners know that the moon plays no role in the solar eclipse. We've been lied to on every level as to where it is we exist. And hopefully millions of people tomorrow will come out to view the eclipse and notice that you cannot detect the moon, because it is not the moon that's occulting the sun. And I was triggered to call because of Garland Nixon mentioning laying railway tracks on the moon, and anybody believing that nonsense is needs their head examining. It's a money laundering operation. The people running the show are psychopaths, and more and more of us are waking up to it.
Well, on that we can all agree, Duke, but what exactly is an eclipse then?
I don't have the answers, George, but I have used equipment to try and detect the moon occulting the sun, as have many other people, especially back. I first discovered this in 2009 when I lived in Tamil Nadu in South India. But many people noticed this at the previous one across America in 2017. It's some kind of node or some kind of invisible body that's covering the sun when it takes place. And this is just a fact.
Well, I can't go with you down that solar pathway, I'm afraid. Not that I'm any kind of scientist or any kind of expert on the universe, but I do believe that the eclipse is what scientists say that it is. But it's an interesting turn of events, isn't it? In the last couple of days, earthquakes striking the United States on both coasts, followed quickly by a total eclipse of the sun. You'd think God was trying to tell them something. Bigfoot sends a £5 donation. Thank you for that. Gigi is my Prime Minister. It's time to evict the leech from 10 Downing Street. We deserve leaders like Gigi, not those who view us as modern slaves. I'm deeply grateful for the donation and the kind words. Thanks to everyone that financially supports our work. The best way to do it is through the donations on YouTube, but especially from patreon.com/George Galloway. That is the most efficient way to support the work that Gayatri and me are doing with these shows and all the other media work that we are doing. I'm going to start very soon an online newspaper called the Northern Star. For those old enough to remember the Chartists, it once had a glorious, glorious past. The Northern Star was the newspaper of the great movement of the Chartists, and it really was a Northern Star. And we're trying to get that star up and running in the sky over the north again. So stay tuned for that. Support it if you can. Best way is through my patreon.com/George Galloway. Now, Gayatri is at the back of the room. I think I should say to her, we need to get in the car right now and drive from Rochdale to London and make another have it out with Galloway, just despite the government minister who threatened me online today over it. The poll results are extraordinary. An average of 97% of you think Israel deliberately targeted those aid workers. I'll be back, God willing, on Wednesday with the mother of all talk shows.